You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I used to love to do Fantine's death. That was one of my favorite numbers.
Okay.
And I did all the coughing and the dying. But my favorite, in a chair, slouched in a chair like that. But my favorite character was actually Eponine. And that's partly because for me growing up, I'm half Chinese. And there wasn't actually really much of a representation for me to look up to. So Lea Salonga was a huge big part of that for me.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or simply click the link in the description of this episode. Special thanks to our producing team, the Broadway Podcast Network. You can check them out at bpn.fm. All right. Another exciting episode for you today, as always, super exciting. And we're making more friends from across the pond. Also love that. Coming to you from London, the West End. She's currently in Be More Chill, the musical playing Christine Canigula. I think I'm saying the last name correctly. She can correct me if I'm wrong, though. But please welcome to the podcast, Miracle Chance. Hi, Miracle.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Wednesday to you. As mentioned, you're over there in London. I'm currently in Miami today. So it's nice to connect from across the water with you.
Wow, Miami. I've never been to Florida, but I'm sure it's nicer weather than here. It's currently gray.
Well, that's, you know, you're living up to what you're known for. That's what London's supposed to be all about, right?
Exactly. It's August and it's raining, so.
All right, well, let's jump into the show going on currently right now as far as Be More Chill. We are still in these special times, the COVID times, and we were talking about it a bit before we hit record. Super excited that you're back up in some capacity. You're taking a short little pause, you had said, but let's run it back to when things opened back up again and you got to come back for that first time. You know, how was that getting back to the theater and getting back to doing what you love to do?
It was absolutely amazing. I'm sure anyone in our industry would feel exactly the same. To find out that something that you were so excited to finish a run in before the pandemic was going to come back and we're going to go to the West End was like, it was honestly, it was Christmas times a million. we had a very short turnaround, which in some ways was positive because of COVID. It meant that we could just get that show up and going and get into the run of things quicker so that the audiences could enjoy the show. So when we opened, I think we had 4 days rehearsal, 3 days tech, and then we just opened the show and it was... Yeah, it was incredible to have that live audience there again. Everyone wanted to be there. And obviously, everyone who really wanted to come and support the theatre come out, even though we were still slightly, there were still rules going on. There's still socially distanced rules, but everyone made it out. They had their masks on and we had a really, really good time. So it was pretty awesome.
Fabulous. Yeah. So a good bit of my Built for the Stage clients that are in, whether it's Hamilton or Moulin Rouge or other shows that are starting to rehearse again, give them some positive vibes, some set their anxieties to ease a bit. When you came back, did it kind of just, you were back at home at per se as like, oh yeah, I remember how to do this. Like it's not as bad as I was anticipating. Or did you feel like you were starting from scratch? Maybe that is the case. Share with us that experience of like, oh, I'm right back in the saddle and I feel good.
Sure. So it's hilarious because obviously I hadn't actually done that much exercise and I should not admit that, but I really hadn't over the time that we had off. And I know other people were like working out and I was like, am I going to die when I do the opening number? Like, is this going to be me? But it was really weird because the show is just like, it's in your body. And when you come back to it, you kind of learn to navigate it again. And I was so anxious about not being able to be physically fit enough to do the show. But I think weirdly, our bodies just remember how they have to pace themselves almost. And obviously, like vocally, it's been a weird year because we have loads of rest and that's been great for the voice. But I mean, it's a muscle, isn't it? The voice is a muscle. So I think I was lucky coming back to a show that my voice was then sitting in. And for anyone else returning to shows that they've been in, I think that is going to be a great thing because it's almost like my voice like was just chilling in the song rather than before when I had opened and I was like, oh, I'm still navigating this, finding my groove with this vocally and stuff like that. So I actually think you'll be fine and you'll be surprised because trust me, I've done no exercise. And if I'm okay, then yeah.
Right. You ease back into it. Yeah. Like any other athlete, there's off seasons sometimes where you're not in season and that body or the muscle you're talking about, your voice in this case, gets to take that bit of a rest. And when you return, yeah, you might be at 70, 80%, but it's not going to take you too long to get back to 100 because you have that foundation that's already built in. So I'm glad to hear that things went well.
I know it was very worrying. Trust me, I had the worry.
let's get into the cult following of Be More Chill. So here in the States, you know, the show opened on Broadway. It has closed since. It is a business, and there are reasons, obviously, mostly economically, why a show closes. But this is a show that just caught fire in the States, in particular with the younger audience. Maybe that's why the show closed here, is just because there wasn't enough old people from the Broadway community going to see it. Tell us about how it is in the West End. Are fans also just going bananas, going crazy over the show? What's it like to be a part of the cast?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I previously did the Rocky Horror Show before Be More Chill. So for me, I was very... It wasn't as shocking, but to see that kind of a fan base and see where the world is so kind to each other as well. The fans are really kind. It's an amazing kind of environment to kind of be part of. People come in cosplay. They come dressed as your character. They, you know, they know when to clap and they really enjoy it. I think it's funny because I thought it was going to be a much younger audience, more like teenage audience, I guess, in the UK. But actually what I'm realizing is what's so clever about Joe and Joe's writing is that actually it's more nostalgic to a time when, you know, you have those kind of more Weezer-y sound and you have like 80s sounds and the language is a bit more, I think, for people in their mid-20s maybe more reminiscent of that. So I think the audience is quite mixed here. I was expecting it to be a lot younger, but actually it kind of goes into this young adult audience and we have people who come from all over the world to come see the show because it is that special. The show is about acceptance and about dealing with social anxiety and other anxieties that we face. And I think that people really connect to the characters because each one has a very specific journey. And you will find that people really stan those characters. You know, they're a Rich fan or they're a Michael fan. And that's because it relates to something that they're going through in their life. So it's been amazing because not only have we had fans from the UK, and I feel like the fan base is growing here, but we've had a lot of international people come as well. So that's been cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. You toured with Rocky Horror, correct? You were touring?
Yes.
So that's cool that you were just a part of a well-established cult following musical, and now you're a part of like a new up-and-coming cult following musical, I'll say. So
it feels very much like a younger Rocky Horror. Like it really does. The way the world and stuff.
Do you have any stories from when you're on tour with Rocky Horror about whether it was like the best costume you ever saw of someone showing up or the most fanatical person at the stage door? Do you have any tidbits of funny times from that?
Oh my goodness, I have so many. The fans of that show, again, like, people cheerleading, it really is a community, and you know, you're part of it. You know everyone. You might go meet them at the show as well. It's a place for people to meet each other as well and enjoy, you know, kind of enjoy this thing that you all love together. So we have a lot of regular fans who come to the show. One fan I'm thinking of has been coming to the Rocky Horror Show for 40 years, and she wears all these different badges on her outfit. We have a lot of people who come in drag. One person I can think of, he basically comes as a showgirl, different colored showgirl. He's got probably about 15 different outfits with the big feathers, you know. And you also know the fan by the character that they dress up as, because, like, you'll see them in the front row, you're like, oh, so-and-so is in tonight. They come always as magenta from the first opening number. But the fans of that show, they love a good shout out, and they really like to catch you out as well. So they might, like, plan something that you're not expecting. And unfortunately, I have to say, I'm a terrible corpser, and I will always corpse stage. But yeah, I've had a lot of things shouted at me, I think the one that sticks out the most is, do you know the Minions? Do you know the Minions?
Yeah, the little yellow guys.
They're like, banana, they do
right,
that
right.
And we had this fan do this shout out. I can't remember what. Oh, Janet says, he goes I'm hiding from my master and his minions. And then they got up and were like, banana, banana, did a whole show, ran across the front of the stage, hitting each other with bananas, and sat down again.
Wow. That would have been tough to hold it together then, for that, for sure.
I didn't hold it.
All right. Amazing. Thanks for sharing that. Let's rewind to something you were talking about with people relating to the Be More Chill characters with their anxieties, or how they relate on facing those fears or anxieties. This is a podcast about wellness. You know, we like to talk about whether it's physical health or mental health. Do you have, whether it's the character that you play or another character in the show that you relate to, in facing anxieties, and maybe just how you personally connect with that? I think that this has always been a issue for people, but it's something in our society that thankfully we're being a bit more open and vocal about. How have you connected with the show, and how has it helped you or allowed you to grow?
It's been really amazing coming back to the show after this time off, because I think all of us faced a lot of anxiety, and people who maybe didn't even suffer with anxiety before are now feeling that a lot more. And to come back to a show where it is literally based off the voices in our head and how we almost ourselves, you know, our inner saboteurs telling us things every day, like, you're not good enough. I mean, me as an actor, I'm my own worst enemy. I'm like, oh, that wasn't good enough, just came off, that was terrible, you know. Oh, I'm never gonna get that job because, you know, I can't do this and that. And I think that's very common in artists, because you have this sense of perfection. You're a perfectionist, right? And that's how we grow in our industry and in our artistry. So coming back into this show was really meaningful, actually, because although we had to deal with that beforehand, I think everyone came in a year and a half older, having so much more anxiety, and knowing that the characters actually were based in that anxiety has added another layer to the show. For my character, I play Christine, and her whole thing is that her escapism is going to play rehearsal and being able to play these different characters. And it should be easy, but that's exactly why I do what I do. And having missed that, you know, the form of therapy of playing someone else, getting to switch off from your own life and playing someone else, has been incredible. And I think she reflects a lot of actors in that way. And then we have a character like Michael, who is really free and really able to be himself, but, you know, then kind of feels a little bit of anxiety, like, you know, do I try enough? Do I try enough to fit in? Am I enough. And I think a lot of us have found freedoms in the characters that have that kind of push and pull within their character, especially with me. Like, she's really happy to be who she is. And that's something that actually I struggle with myself. So it's been therapeutic having to tackle that within the character, and kind of give in to that as an actor rather than, you know. So it's funny. I don't know. And it's funny because you have fans messaging you saying, I love how Christine is so, you know, happy to be who she is. And it's easy for her to just let go and just be this person. And there is definitely a side of me who feels that, but then there's this definite side of me who also has this pressure and this inner saboteur. So yeah, it's an amazing show to be able to explore that as well within.
Yeah. No. What's the word for that? The Leonardo DiCaprio movie. What's it called? Inception? Is
Inception.
That what it's called? Yeah. The story within a story within a story.
I can't remember. There was a name for it, but my brain is failing me.
It's okay. All right, let's start to turn the corner on the episode and get to know you just a little bit more personally and your background. Where are you originally from, and when did you start to decide like theater could be your jam, your full-time gig? When did that start to happen for you?
So I'm originally from Devon, which is in the southwest of England. So it's right near the sea. I'm a country girl at heart, so living in London is it's a lot for me. Like, where's the mountains? So I think I pretty much knew that I always wanted to do something that was performance-based from probably about the age of four.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Who influenced you at four? Were you watching like movie musicals, or what was going on at 4 years old?
I mean, the Spice Girls, of course.
Okay.
Big part. But my dad is, he's a singer and a songwriter. So he always played guitar and sang to us. I thought he wrote Here Comes the Song, Here Comes the Sun. So I was very disappointed when I learned it was a Beatles song later on in life. But he's very much an artist, and my mum's an artist as well. So I think for me, I came from a very creative household and not very academic at all. I'm quite dyslexic and I find it really hard to read and write, especially when I was younger. So for me, going to do things that were more creative and performance-based was something I could actually excel in and express myself in, whereas writing and reading I really struggled with. So that's kind of where it came from. And literally we had like a little raised area in my house at home, just a little raised area. And I always was like, this is the stage. And I would have to sit, I would sit down all my brothers and sisters and my parents and just be like, right, I'm doing One Woman Les Mis today at 9 years old.
I would love to see that performance.
It's interesting.
Who was your favorite character to play in Les Mis?
I think partly Jean Valjean, obviously, because, you know, telling that story. I loved it when he would, you know, like, talk about the loaf of bread and stuff. I used to love to do Fantine's Death. That was one of my favorite numbers.
Okay.
And I did all the coughing and the dying. But my favorite... slouched in a chair like that. But my favorite character was actually Eponine, and that's partly because for me growing up, I'm half Chinese, and there wasn't actually really much other representation for me to look up to. So Lea Salonga was a huge big part of that for me, and like, you know, I was like, I love her so much. I want to be an Eponine when I'm older. Yeah, so that's sort of why I loved Les Mis so much, was because of Lea Salonga.
Yeah, she is it. She is it, my friend. You were talking about the struggles of the reading and writing. Does that transfer over, though, those struggles when you're writing your own music? Because I saw that during our prolonged break, that you are getting more into writing your own music and recording it now. Talk to us about that process and how that's kind of developed in your career. Listen to some of the stuff on your Instagram. It's fire for sure. So kudos to you. Everyone that's listening, as always, you can check out Miracle's Instagram handle in the description of this podcast. So just click on that and make sure to give her a follow. But yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. So I have always been a songwriter alongside my acting. It's always been a passion of mine, and I always wondered, would I be an actor or would I go into music? Because I was just as passionate about both of the things. I think for me, music has always been a way to be able to express myself when I haven't been in a show, when I've been down in my career. You know, we've all been really unemployed, and not having a distraction, I actually think that can sometimes be the worst thing for someone. If it's writing in your journal, or, you know, deciding to enter a monologue competition, or writing music, or whatever it is, if you don't have a second outlet, it's very, very difficult to stay sane when you're not employed. So that's how my music has developed, because in those times when I've been unemployed, I've gone, right, no, you're not going to just, you know, do your muggle job. You're gonna do writing as well. And so kind of started in 2015. I released my first folk EP, which feels like a long time ago. And then ever since then, it's kind of developed. I wrote a musical over lockdown called Sitting Pretty, and I work with a band called Arrow, which is electropop. But it's just another way for me to express myself and let my creativity be heard. Also, I don't know if other actors find this, but I love musicals, and I feel like it is going away where you can sing how you want, and definitely in Be More Chill, I feel like I can sing how I'd like to. But for a very long time, it was like, we just want this legit sound, or we just want this pop sound. And I have a folk background, so for me, I don't actually get to make the sound that would naturally come out of myself. It's very important to me, especially for my expression. And I think I would rate it just as highly important as my acting career, for sure.
How do you get yourself to put the pen to the paper, or to organize these things with the band that you mentioned that you collaborated with, like in fitness or like in your career? We always have these like moments of, I know I would enjoy this, or I know I should do this, or I know I could do this, but I just can't quite get myself to just do it. So how do you get yourself to just plainly stated do what you want to do? And perhaps maybe you share with us, like, maybe there are days that you don't, and how you address those days as well.
100%. Like, I can relate to all of that. 100%. Getting started is the hardest part, for sure. But I find the best thing to do is reward yourself in the morning or late at night. So have a coffee or a tea ready to go that you really really delicious that you know you're going to enjoy. And then if you're a kind of, if you're a laptop person, you like typing, then get a Google doc up, or a, you know, whatever, a Word doc up. If you are way better with just writing in a journal, just get it there and just tell yourself, from this time to this time, no matter what comes out, I'm just going to do it. Even if it's terrible, at least you get your creative juices flowing, because 9 times out of 10, the first 2 hours of writing, you're like, what was I even thinking? This is terrible. But then you get into like a third hour and you're like, I'm a genius, because you have to kind of wet the paintbrush a bit before you start going. So I would recommend just like really just committing to a time, basically. Mm-hmm. And I've been dry creatively so many times in my career. And I think what's been really hard over this year is not having any art exhibitions to go to, any concerts, any theatre to kind of, you know, give you some inspiration or just make you feel something. And I think a lot of artists over this time have felt pretty dry because of that. What was really hard writing this musical was finding any form of inspiration to kind of take it from. So I had to learn to almost be able to create something from nowhere, from feeling very, very uninspired. And how I did that was by reading books, actually. Like, an easy way to even get started is to read a simple book, or to have a coffee, even like a coffee table book. Like, I've got a Japan book on my coffee table. I've got a tarot card illustration book, and I just open a page and just set yourself a goal. Like, okay, what's this photo? It's a photo of a blossom tree. Okay, I'm going to write something that sounds like this photo, or I'm going to create a story about two people meeting under the blossom tree. Like, literally, it can be as dumb as that. But if you just set yourself an exercise, hopefully you'll get somewhere, maybe mm-hmm. instantly or in hour three.
Yeah, absolutely. I had never like put it this way, but in a lot of ways, life is just a pinball machine, in the sense of, you're heading a direction towards one of the walls or one of the targets within the machine, and you don't mm-hmm. know really where it's going to take you. But even if it doesn't take you anywhere in that particular moment or place, it probably mm-hmm. will lead you to the next one that does have some type of substantial impact. So whether that's the books you're reading or the people you're talking to, you just never yeah. know. So I love that about the coffee table books and just how those can transport you somewhere that can lead to creativeness with your writing.
Yeah. I mean, I've literally read this one book, and I had inspiration for about 3 songs from one book. And I think I didn't even finish the book. I still haven't finished the book. I think I'm on like halfway through. But from like the first 3 chapters, I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And I think it's something solid, because in these times, you don't, you know, you might not be able to go to theatre yet or whatever. It's something solid that you know is like there, and you can always look at it. But what's been cool with the band is I've learned that collaboration also is a really good one to keep your creativity going. Because if you are speaking to people and you get an essence of what they're about, there is an interesting space where you want to translate their essence or what they're, you know, they might even have a story about that they read. The amount of times that the band, you know, my bandmate Kat was like, yeah, I just read this article in the newspaper. And I like, tell me more. Like, literally, like, what? Our most recent song, Rebel Ideas, was literally based off the fact that Kat was like, yeah, I just read this book, Rebel Ideas. And then, like, in my head, I just like heard the hook whilst we were having coffee. And I was like, I'm going to need you to just stop for a moment so I can just work out what this hook is. people are awesome for that too. And they definitely flavor what you're doing if you collaborate with them.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, that's going to be it for today. Fabulous conversation. Thanks so much for sharing all of this. And it was really good to get to start to know you a bit. Everyone that's listening, again, check out the description of the episode. We'll drop links to whether it's getting a little bit more of Miracle in Be More Chill, or maybe we can get some of her songs and put links to that in this as well. So we'll chat with her a little bit after to see if we can get that going. Miracle, thanks so much for being on Built for the Stage podcast.
Thanks for having me. And hello to everyone in the States, and sending love and hope and just, yeah, I hope everyone's well.
Yeah, we'll take it all. Thank you so much. All right, everyone. That was Miracle Chance on Built for the Stage podcast. If you like the podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. And check us out at Built for the Stage. We'll be waiting for you. This is Joe Roscoe signing off.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.